Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey there, Investment Voice listener. We have a treat for you today. We're taking a look at how the hospitality sector reacted to the global pandemic, the signs of recovery already on the horizon, and how you can best take advantage of it without being taken advantage of. And to help us explore this topic, we have not one, but two guests to help us dive in. Joining us now is Joseph Yi. Joe is the Chief Investment Officer for Real Hospitality Group, which has over 100 hotels in their portfolio. His investment experience spans almost two decades, including over $4 billion in hotel investments. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, Joe, few real estate sectors were blindsided more savagely by COVID in 2020 than retail and hospitality. And I really think retail isn't as bad, perhaps, or you might argue it was. New York City, I believe, really took the brunt of the beating from the whole country. And despite fewer business restrictions, a downward trajectory in infections, a massive pent-up demand, have you seen a recovery as a majority of Americans are still so fearful of traveling, flying, staying in a hotel, going dancing?
Yeah, I think it's market-driven. So if your question is, how is the overall U.S. industry, hotel industry doing? The market is obviously down. No surprise to any of the listeners. Roughly down still 50%. Across the board, you know, you can see somewhere around 46% to be real precise across the country. But if you're talking about New York City and some of the gateway cities we have, the market is down incredibly worse. So for example, New York City is still 75% roughly down.
75% down or vacancies?
Well, we're talking about kind of the metrics that matters to most investors, which is what we call RevPAR, revenue per available room. And right now, for the month of March, for example, we're down to about $50, slightly below $50 for the whole city of New York, where it should have been literally about $130, $140. And then if you're looking at just Manhattan RevPAR is similarly about $50, where we should have been close to in March, somewhere around $170, just to kind of give you some context. Generally speaking, most markets, Manhattan holds the numbers higher than other boroughs. But as we have seen in the downturn, for various reasons, but predominantly because of two segments that we're now seeing, and that kind of goes into the conversation of where we are today and where we're going to be, let's say, in the next 12 months. International travel or long-haul travel, obviously, is very negligible. And then large corporate accounts are still not recovering and returning. So when you have gateway cities that heavily relies on those two segments, you're just not going to get enough occupancy, and certainly you're not getting any rates.
Right. I suppose this would come under the restaurant sector. What about locals who are moving out, haven't moved back to Manhattan, or simply just don't want to move out of their home?
Well, there's been a great migration or exodus, if you will, in the fall and winter of 2020. And that's pretty obvious, right? There's not much to do here in New York. It's congested. Why live in a small box for a high price when you could go into the suburbs? That migration has reversed itself, and you've seen New Yorkers come back. And that's reflected also if you just look at apartment vacancies. So some of this is anecdotal. Manhattan was somewhere around 70 to 80% occupancy based on lease agreements, not actual people in the door. That would be much lower than that, but actual leases and signed. We're back up to where it should be, a little slow, a little lower, but back to 90%+.
Right. Well, Manhattan is opening out. Universities are going to go back, not completely virtual. So you'll have the students and you'll have those people back in. I don't know if we'll see travel for a while, but right now we want to see what are the signs of recovery in the hospitality sector. And I know you deal with purchasing and developing hospitality. Are you seeing deals right now? Is this a good time for institutional investors or individuals who are looking at hospitality for investment to come into New York?
Yeah, I mean, there are deals happening, but the volume is few percentage points to what it is normally. So in 2020, the transaction volume from March to end of the year, basically beginning of COVID to the end of the year, was 2% of normal. Normal market is about $40 billion in the hospitality space across the country. We did about $1 billion last year in transaction trade. So the market is still down. And primarily why it's down is if I'm buying New York City and I have an expectation of getting 10% of my money, and the seller wants to sell you that based on that expectation, the disconnect between seller and buyer is that how long is the recovery going to take for me to get to that 10%, if you will, and how much I need to get a discount today to make up for the loss of cash flow that you're not getting 10% in normal times. So that disconnect in pricing has resulted in buyers obviously kind of waiting for better pricing and sellers waiting for pre-pandemic values or close to it. But that's slowly changing.
We are seeing a trend with high net worth individuals who are looking for deals in New York City. They're coming in now and saying that this is perhaps our right time. And of course, we would love to encourage that because we would love to see the recovery in New York City get there faster.
Yeah, I think you look at the recovery in two ways. One, you look at it from a fundamental operational side, and then you look at it from an investment perspective. One's going to recover faster than the other, and that's the latter, where investment trades, putting aside prop valuation for now, deal trades will tick up significantly in the next, probably at the end of the year to 2022, simply because, A, investors recognize that the bottom of the market has already obviously occurred. There's a recovery. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. They have some more confidence to put money out. The investors are not one bucket investors, right? They're not all just buying real estate buying all hotels. They look at the other opportunities, and the public markets is fairly frothy. You see the public market in the last month not really moving anymore. So a lot of the investors in the public markets, stock market, if you will, have decided to kind of reallocate more money into real estate recently.
You know, Joe, as you know, New York City has always been a favorite with EB5, and there has been a trend at this point of moving away from New York City and perhaps going out to places like the Catskills or other rural places around the country. But we are seeing signs of investors coming back and saying that, asking really, will New York City be back to where it was in 5 years from now? Because remember, with EB-5, you get your money back 5, 6, 7 years later, not immediately.
The succinct answer is yes. And I'm not saying that because I'm a through and through New Yorker, but indications are showing, and the metrics that we follow are showing, that in 4 to 5 years, we fully expect full recovery. You know, there's some debate about where that recovery is going to be more positive. And really, it kind of goes into really understanding the hotel business, right? The customers on our side of the equation is not all the same.
Everyone is unique.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has different motivations for travel.
Yeah.
And different price points of travel. So the way we look at it is long-term, why New York City is a good bet. And New York City generally has always been a good bet if you look at it in two ways. But once again, just fundamental operational side, we firmly believe that over the decade and years after that, our tourism market will continue to grow.
Yeah.
New York City has done a terrible job in promoting our hospitality industry through the current administration. On his farewell exit, if you will, he is actually committed to doing some promotions in light of COVID-19, of course.
Yeah.
So he's putting $30 million of real dollars to promote the New York City brand. I love New York. That's not coming out because somebody just simply loves New York. That's from the New York Travel Tourism Board that use that as a promotional.
Right.
What also has happened during the Trump administration is the USA brand has deteriorated. And I don't mean it in a political sense. I mean in the sense that the USA travel organization stopped spending money on advertising US markets in foreign countries. That has all kind of reversed itself. So there's more money now being put into our sector to promote the brand. Number two, if you look at the last 10 years, international leisure travel has continued to grow. And New York City has benefited significantly from that. As middle class and other countries like China continue to grow, and there's no signs of ever slowing down in the near term, you're going to have more tourists coming to New York, which are the higher paying customers, right? They generally stay 4 nights versus domestic travelers that stay 2.3 nights.
Sounds like a good sign. Are those businesses leading indicators?
Those are the type of businesses that shows good positive signs. What does concern us as an industry is where the corporate travel is going to be.
Right.
I firmly believe corporate travel will recover one way or the other.
Yeah.
But the question is how they're going to travel may change. But I don't think that's going to change the bottom line to us. And what I mean by that, the corporate traveler might not be traveling as much coming into New York City because he's doing Zoom meetings rather than doing personal meetings. Well, that same gentleman now may be a leisure traveler because they don't have to be in the office all day long. So they could travel. And if people want to travel, New York City is generally a good benefit of that. And you've seen that the last recession as well.
Yeah, we have. But nothing has moved the needle as much as Zoom meetings, I will say. Zoom meetings, you can do 90% and you may lose 90%, but you cannot close a deal on a Zoom meeting. You need to have that last handshake. That I don't think will change.
I guess my point is you could debate all of that to the cows come home. Yeah. But ultimately, my point is that person will travel one way or the other and travel either as a, for corporate or for leisure. And you see that today. Most people say, well, there's no corporate travel. Well, ask your friends where they're calling in from. And a lot of them are traveling, just not happen to be at home.
That's true.
Yeah.
So we think that fundamentals are going to be very good. And then just from a real estate perspective, why EB-5 investors should always favor New York City is this market has the best liquidity in the global real estate market. Things will trade, volumes will pick up, and values generally will kind of recover to the norm. So while COVID-19 has been incredibly destructive and nobody could plan for this, if you are 5-10 year holders of real estate, I think you're in a good position. Of course, EB-5 investors are different type of investors. You can't perfectly time any market, but I would say looking at 5 years out, there's no indication why it wouldn't be a safe bet.
Well, Joe and Mona, let me ask you both something. It sounds like there may be a new opportunity for developers that hadn't considered EB-5 before to do so now because the typical investor, their wait for funds, as you mentioned, is 5 to 7 years, which is well after recovery. What do you think about that?
Well, Mark, actually, that's a great point. Joe, you're very familiar with the EB-5 world, and you know how it helped New York City so much back in 2008, 2009. And your company does a lot of development, but would you do future development in New York, and would you consider EB-5 funds moving forward?
I guess the answer is yes and yes. EB-5 money is just a cheaper cost of money. Only hesitation a developer had takes time. It takes a lot of work to raise the money, but there's other participants like regional centers. We happen to do our own regional center. So time, cost of money was something of a factor for myself. You know, when you could pay half the cost of what you would normally pay to get these kind of leveraged financing, I think every developer will jump on it again.
Now that time to wait is a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Would you build in New York? Yeah, absolutely. Ultimately, you know, it's a strong market. There's bumps in the road. There's been a lot of new projects in New York City over the last 3 years. So the fundamentals weren't growing as much as we would have liked to. But ultimately, the numbers are still very incredibly attractive.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I agree as well. Joseph Yee, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark and Mona. Appreciate it. Looking forward to brighter days ahead of us.
We'll continue the discussion of signs of recovery in the hospitality sector in New York City. We also have joining us another expert from Hidrock Properties. We have Abraham Hittery. AB, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be here.
AB, wonderful to have you on the show. And as you know, we're discussing the signs of recovery in the New York City hospitality sector, because really few real estate sectors were more decimated in COVID than the gateway cities. And I think out of all of the gateway cities, New York City took the brunt of the beating.
Yes, New York has, you used the right word, decimated in the hospitality industry. The hospitality industry was such an important driver of economic activity here in New York. And when guests stopped coming to New York, whether they were business travelers or leisure tourists, everything shut down. The restaurants, bars, the retail activity, it's been had a very, very significant impact. But on the bright side, yes, we are seeing signs of a comeback. Tourists are coming back. We haven't seen the business activity yet follow, but we're sure that it will. And we're very excited.
Yeah, well, the reason we wanted to start about on New York City was because often the trends have shown that when New York City starts, other cities follow. And that really has been the case, except for the fact that I'm going to ask you, leisure or business, which do you think will push the recovery? Because we've heard a lot about revenge travel.
Yeah, in this case, it's going to be leisure. The big question mark in the hospitality circles here in New York is, will business travel ever be the same? And I hesitate, you know, I'm in the business for over 20 years now, and I hesitate to ever suggest that there's been a structural change. because in my experience, there are cycles. And whenever you're at the top of a cycle or bottom of a cycle, you think that things can never go back to the way they are. So take it with a grain of salt. But this time might really be different, because will business travelers need to travel as much or for as long as they did in the past is a real question, given the changes that we've had to business meetings and conferences. And the big concern there is that business travelers are the ones who spend the most. Yeah. Leisure travelers are typically price sensitive, whereas business travelers are usually not spending their own money, but they're spending their company's money, and they tend to spend more.
And they're trying to impress the other person too. So that makes a difference.
Exactly. So, in this case, to answer your question, in this case, the leisure market, there are people that cannot wait to get out. They're going to come. We're already seeing it in certain markets like Miami. There will be travelers that come out and get to New York for the first time in a long time, but for the first time ever, and actually be able to enjoy it a little more because prices have come down. So we're going to see that. The business travel is an open question. We'll see when that comes back.
True, but there are conferences. I know people are starting to talk about conferences, and recently there was a conference for hoteliers down in Miami, of course. But what I have found that over the last year and a half, the first 6 months, nobody really felt comfortable doing business on Zoom. It was fine for introductions, but if you wanted to close, you had to meet in person. And my gut feeling is that's still the same.
Yeah, I agree. Business travel to close deals, to build relationships is of utmost importance. I just don't know that it's going to come back to where it was.
Yeah.
There were traveling salespeople that would travel for a half hour meeting somewhere and then hop on a plane and go for another half hour meeting. I just don't know that you're going to see that. There will be conferences and there will be travel. Don't get me wrong. Just will it come back to 100% of what it was? I believe it'll be a fraction of what it was. It is possible, though, that leisure travel will be so strong that it'll make up for any loss in business travel. Time will tell.
That's an interesting point. And what about pent-up wedding demand? Because surely that will give a big boost to the industry.
Business travel, leisure travel, there's so many different aspects of travel that make up our industry. Weddings is a part of it. And I think to different extents, different parts are going to come back at different levels at different times. So what we're looking at is, as far as structurally goes, I think that the reason there'll be more leisure travel is because it's been more accepted to work outside the office. So if people are going to have, let's say, you know, a lot of companies that said, we're not coming back to the office on Fridays ever.
Yeah.
If that really happens, I think you'll see more families travel on weekends for the long weekend and work from Friday wherever they are. So it'll be more accepted to be able to go away and work from wherever you are. And that's why I think you'll see a lot more leisure travel out there.
Yeah, I think it was coming. We perhaps had it accelerated because of COVID by maybe 5 years. But this was always on the plate as Zoom had been starting to get better and better. But let me ask you, there was a number of operational changes that you would have had to put in because of COVID and say in the food and beverage section of your hotels, etc. What are the permanent operational changes that you actually see?
Time will tell again, right? It's still too fresh and too early. Yeah. So I can only guess. I think it'll depend on the level of hotel. In a 3-star hotel that used to cater to the more budget conscious traveler, there will be certain touch points that go away. Front desk. There used to be 2-3 people at the front desk. It certainly won't be necessary anymore because people, just technology is there now. And yeah. Now the will is there for the guests to come in, check in either on their phone or at a small kiosk. And you won't necessarily need those people at the front desk. And to the extent you do need somebody to man the desk, the hours will probably be shorter and they're probably able to do a combo job. You know, sometimes there's a little Starbucks kiosk or something that this one individual could float between. So that's sort of one example.
That's interesting. Do you have any other examples?
I think you're going to see, you mentioned food and beverage. There's hotels, even the 4-star hotels that maybe had restaurant component. That is now going to be, let's say, more buffet, less hours. There could be delivery services to your room that come through apps from third-party restaurants in the neighborhood, local establishments. So you won't necessarily see the same food and beverage experience in a lot of the hotels, unless obviously it's part and parcel to the hotel experience, which applies to a lot of the nicer hotels. And then smaller things like the elevators, You have a room key that'll take you up to your floor, which is better for security anyway. You don't have to press the buttons, things like that.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, when you talked about the will to change, that's so important. I remember when, just before the pandemic, if you had, say you had a big hotel and there would be a check-in yourself kiosk and someone with a person, people would automatically go to wherever they saw a person. And they would never go into the personless kiosk, so to speak. That's changed.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's been, to an extent, there was a age that dictated more often than not whether you were the guy that waited online or if you checked in from your phone and from the kiosk. And I think a lot of that is going away now. A lot of people are much more comfortable with the technology. They've been forced to adapt to it during the corona crisis. And I think that's going to continue on.
Yeah. So it's really how the market has adapted to all of this. But has New York City helped? Have you seen sort of help in taxes or other areas?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges to running a hotel is that the city's actually seems to have gone out of its way to make it more difficult.
Oh, no.
I know that's not their goal. Our political officials, elected officials, they're well-intentioned and they want to help those who need help the most. But sometimes, you know, there's two ways to help somebody. Like they say, you could give them a fish or teach them how to fish. And I think our city here in New York has taken the approach of, well, let's give people fish. And they've had regulations and requirements and taxes that have made it very difficult to operate a business. And if businesses can't grow and expand and succeed, then jobs just won't be there and jobs will be able to pay, you know, what they have. And we were on actually a great trajectory going back the last really 20 years here in the city. And new policies that have come out have made it very difficult for businesses in general, not just hotels.
I would like to see that change. So here's the question for investors that who may be listening. Is this a good time to put some money into New York City?
It's a good time to put money in certain spots in New York City. I always caution against painting everything with the same brush. New York City is a very dynamic and large market. And so the answer to the question is, it will depend. If somebody wants to just invest in New York, I think that could be a mistake. If somebody works with a local developer, local sponsor that knows the city and could identify a good deal from a bad deal and a good area from a bad area and a good block to a bad block. I mean, very often, I always like to say, you look at 34th Street in Midtown Manhattan, and there's the north side of 34th Street and the south side of 34th Street, and there's very different pedestrian activity on both sides of that street. So if you're investing from outside and you say, I want to invest in New York, I want to invest in the Herald Square submarket on 34th Street, that might be a good idea, but you could buy on the wrong side of the street. Yeah. So it's very important, I think, know what you're investing in, and it could be a great time. It could also be a mistake. A lot of the deals that are right now for sale in New York City are properties that were suffering pre-pandemic.
You know what? That's right. That's exactly what we've seen. We did a little bit of a study and we noticed that anyone who was in debt or had been over leveraged pre-pandemic, they were the ones who really couldn't survive.
Yeah, exactly. And you could be an investor today and you say, oh, wow, it's a great time to buy in New York. The market's down. Look at this deal that's for sale. I'm going to invest in it. Meanwhile, this has been a problem deal for 4 years.
Yeah.
So it could be a mistake. So it's important to partner with the right local investors. I know a company like us, and I don't mean to point only to us, other companies like us also, but yeah. We have a staff that looks at opportunities in New York, and every day we're presented with four or five of them, every single day. We're looking at over 1,000 opportunities a day in Brooklyn, in Queens, in Manhattan, and very often a deal that all of a sudden seems like a you know, great deal that's just hitting the market now really has been floating around the market for years trying to find a buyer. And when they can't find a local buyer, then they start to market it outside. And those investors often make mistakes if they don't have the right local partner.
Excellent advice, especially to overseas investors who just see a city name and think that's a good deal. But let me ask you one more question. Some of the larger hotels, there was a lot of talk and there's been articles about the fact that obviously with the change in the pandemic, people are working more from home. How about changing some of the suites, say commercial to residential? Is that something that hotels are looking at?
Yes. But again, going back to zoning laws and how our city works, it's not so easy. There are zoning laws that sometimes mandate whether a property can be commercial or residential. So you can't always convert unless you're in a spot in the city that allows both residential and commercial. And the other difficulty is that a lot of hotels are built in a certain shape. that have hallways and elevators, and then these small rooms around the perimeter, those don't always lay out well for residential conversions. So I'd say the vast majority of hotels are unable to convert to residential. When one can't convert to residential, they could convert to office. But even office buildings, even though both are considered commercial uses, office and hotel, they also have sometimes layout issues and being converted. And there's different zoning laws for an office building. Sometimes you need more stairwells, wider stairwells, and things like that. So not every hotel can be converted. And I think that's why you read the headlines that there'll be 20%, 30% of hotels that are going to be permanently shut down and not reopen. That's an overstated number. There will be hotels that convert to residential and office, but it's not going to be anywhere near that number, merely because they cannot. They don't have the physical ability to convert to another use.
This is all excellent advice, AB, and especially because you are really what we would call down in the weeds, seeing how the New York City market is every day. I know your company's looking at properties in Florida, but New York City, I would still say, sets the trend. Saying that, what do you see in the tea leaves over the next 6 months or a year for this industry?
I like to break up the hotel industry really into two parts. One is fundamentals of running a property. So that's bringing in guests and hiring the right people and providing the right service in the hotel, making money on the ground. And the other is in the capital markets. And that's lenders and investors and buyers. And it really, sometimes they run two totally different tracks. So I think on the fundamentals, we're going to see steady improvement in the coming 6 to 12 months. We were doing in New York 10 to 20% occupancy for seems like a year. And then we jumped to about 30 and 40. Now we're up to about 45%. I think that it may drop a little as some hotels start to reopen. Some have been closed temporarily, obviously. And then it'll steadily go back up. So on the fundamental side, I think that's pretty clear. I think on the capital market side, it's going to be sort of a tale of two different marketplaces. Lenders, the institutional funds are going to be extremely active in getting involved in hotels, especially in New York. But there's not going to be a ton of buying and selling activity because there's almost no need for it. There's no need for companies that own hotels a long time to sell them. They're not going to be making money by selling them. They're not going to be forced to sell them. So it's going to come down to investing capital to wait for the market to come back sufficiently so that these properties are operating where they used to. And there'll be a ton of activity from lenders, from investors providing what we're calling rescue capital, money that's going to get the property another, let's say, 24 to 36 months to where they'll be in position to start to really make money on the capital market side, which is through a sale or a refinance or something like that.
No, you're spot on, because that's exactly what the signs are right now. And with all the inquiries relating to properties in this area. So I think, yeah, you read the tea leaves well. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see in 6 months.
Abe, you know this podcast is primarily about the recovery to the New York City markets, but there are other gateway markets, which I know that you know you have quite a lot of information on.
Yes. The last 10 years, we've been extremely active in New York City. We've built 6 hotels ground up, and we know the market really well, but we also know all the industry players. We're very close with all the major brands, Hilton and Marriott and Choice and Hyatt and Wyndham, and a lot of the really great operators, because we don't actually operate our own hotels. We bring on third parties, and there's a lot of great companies. So we have looked at hotels outside of the New York area. We spent a lot of time analyzing the Boston market, the Washington, D.C. market, and then some time in up-and-coming markets, Denver and Austin, Nashville, Raleigh, North Carolina. But what's really intrigued us is Miami, because Miami has a lot of the ingredients that you have in New York City. And now all of a sudden, it has a ton of momentum. But not only is there a lot of leisure travel, a lot of business travel, there's a lot of conventions, there's a lot of overseas travel. It is a true gateway market, whether from Europe, whether from Central, South America. I think that a lot of people looking to get away in the next 12 months that maybe would have considered New York City are now equally considering Miami. And I think, quite frankly, at this point, Miami wins. The weather's better. You don't have some of the political headwinds that, let's say, half of the country may disagree with. So there, it's exciting and it's building upon itself. A lot of businesses are moving. I'm very excited about Miami. We've looked at a bunch of opportunities and there's a ton of capital going into Miami. It's been actually, quite frankly, difficult for us to compete because pricing has gone up so much higher than we expected it would. But that's something that, in my experience, going through cycles, we're at the beginning of the cycle, and that's going to build on itself. And as capital goes into Miami, there'll be more capital that goes into Miami. And as more goes, there'll be even more, because you tend to have that type of process play out in up markets. So we're very excited about investing, not only in Miami, but in South Florida, even up to Orlando. There's great things going on in Orlando as well. So we're taking a really close look at those markets.
AB, thank you so much for coming on and not only talking about New York City, but how some of those lessons learned in New York City can extend to other areas across the U.S. And as you brought up before, it sounds like it's very important to work with somebody that has local knowledge, because as the headlines are reporting, it's all macroeconomics, right? We're seeing the big opportunities in big regions, but it's the local knowledge on this side of the street versus that side of the street. That's a deal that's been pre-pandemic and now repackaged and things for people to look out for. So I appreciate you bringing that insight.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. I enjoyed being part of it and look forward to being invited back.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.